Welcome to the Uplift Chronicles, where we journey through the powerful stories of those who inspire, uplift, and make a difference. I am your host, Kofi Dake. In each episode, we dive deep into the lives, accomplishments, and the diverse backgrounds of remarkable individuals, particularly those of Afro heritage, who are changing the world one story at a time. Whether you are seeking motivation, connection, or a celebration of culture, you are definitely in the right place. So sit back and relax, and let's explore how lives have been uplifted, both in Africa and across the globe. This is the Uplift Chronicles.
We have an honor today to have a special guest in our midst. Our guest for today is Bafo Go. Bafo hails from Jamaica and now resides and works in the USA. So Mr. Bafo has rode through the ranks from being a police officer to now working in mental health in the U.S. Army. Welcome to the Uplift Chronicle, Mr. Bafo.
Thank you, Kof.
Yeah, so I just scratched the surface of your bio right now. So do you mind sharing more about yourself with us?
So as you just pointed out, I was born in Jamaica, grew up in a little rural district called Horton Grove Ramble, and grew up with my grandparents, and they were like farmers. My grandfather was a farmer, my grandmother supported and played the role of, taking care of the house and worked too a lot. Both of them worked at the agricultural school and did common line jobs. I mean, just to put it that way. So my grandfather was a farmer there. My grandmother was worked in the pantry, washing up the plates and so on. So humble beginnings, really, is what I'm saying. And, of course, went to some schools there, primary school, high school. From there, I transitioned into the police force, went to the Jamaica Police Academy at like age 21 or 20, somewhere thereabouts, in 1989, actually. And then I had a career in the police force of like 17 plus years. Then transitioned to US in 2006. But before doing that, I did other things. A lot of what I did was, community involvement. I was I played soccer a lot. I ended up coaching soccer. So I did that within the police community division. So, we would mobilize communities and use soccer and coaching soccer with teams within the communities as a way of building partnership with the police and the community.
This was Jamaica, right?
Yes, that's okay. Jamaica. And then also did some of my music that I'm doing now in the form of like dub poetry and so on. So poems in a rhythmic format and DJing, as you would call it, a la like the Buju Bantans of the world, Cape Town, Sizzler. So formats like those. And then formats like Muta Baruka, which is a dub poetry form. So the dub poetry format I would use within the schools. So I would put on my police uniform and would DJ, dub poems for students. And that will help to kind of sort of build that relationship too, build a bridge between the young folks and the police.
Yes.
So those are some of my highlights in Jamaica.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And thank you for that. So I did tell the topic, your involvement in music. And I think we'll talk about it also in depth during this interview. Yeah. So, how was the transition for you moving from Jamaica, different culture, and coming to the United States? And what actually motivated you to get into the U.S. Army? kind of answering this from a perspective of a person of color, a black man, and stuff like that. What are kind of challenges did you face?
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I was married at the time. At the time when I left Jamaica, I was married with two sons, and still, I still have two sons. Obviously, they're older now. In a committed relationship now, but I'm not married as society would have it. Divorced twice, married, divorced twice, actually. But I mentioned that because, there was some economic issues with, so my wife at the time was a teacher, I was a police officer. So there was some economic issues because, even with the two of us jobs put together, we really could not sort of make it as how we wanted to make it. Adequately with, building a home, we struggled to do that, and for the kids and everything. So when the opportunity came to leave, so those were some of the, that was one of the main issues for, looking at searching for a better economic opportunity was one of the motivating factors for sure. And then also, fed up with the, disappointed and frustrated with the direction of the police force at the time. It is universal because not only Jamaica that's struggling with that kind of a focus, but a lack of focus on community building or partnership building. But here in the US, I think that's the issue too. So I was frustrated with the fact that I would be focusing a lot on building partnerships with the police and the communities. And then the top brass of the police force wasn't on the same page with me. So when I would have meetings with them, they would be brushing off some of the reports that I would be bringing to them and not seeing that as important enough. And so I grew more and more frustrated with that. So a combination of those two things, and then when the opportunity came to transition, then I just took it.
Yeah. So that's a good point you brought about, because many a times we do think that some countries do not have problem, but that's what just kind of it highlights that every country has its challenges. So when we talked before this podcast, we talked generally, and we saw that you have a lot of experiences and stories to tell, and we said we'll talk about your career, your uplift stories, and then also your involvement in football, which in the US people predominantly call it soccer. And then also your chanting music. So we'll kind of have like a free flow on this, and we'll touch different aspects of your experiences. But one question I had was, I know you do a lot of mental health in the US Army as well. So how was that transition from being a police officer into that? Were there some skills that you transferred from being a police officer, or why didn't you just decide to be like maybe a police officer in the United States, but decided to go the route into the US Army doing mental health?
All right. So, So the transition, it was transition to mental health. And so I do mental health, both as a civilian and as an army officer now, as a reserve army officer. So the transition took place over a period of almost like, so the transition first to nursing, because I became a registered nurse first. And then after that, then I started to work on my bachelor's. And then at that time, after completing my bachelor's, then I found out that I was qualified to become an army officer, and that was, the reason why that actually motivated me. And then needed some help at the time as someone just starting over from a third world country, so to speak. So the army helped out with my tuition, my school tuition, and gave me a stipend. And so that was also one of the the appealing factors. And then also for me to help with Army veterans and soldiers who would have had or who were having negative reactions to war times and war environments and other kind of, you know, challenging issues within the Army. The transition for me from a police officer to a nurse, it was tricky at first, but, you know, so I was skeptic and somewhat hesitant. And but what did it for me, you know, I just at one point couldn't make the connection, but a couple of things. I mean, the marketability of nursing, when I did my little research, that appealed to me because, of course, economics was at the kind of the forefront of my mind. And, you know, to take care of myself and to take care of the kids, of course, coming into a vast country, a big, massive country like the U.S. So the appeal was the marketability of nursing and that it was in demand. And then as foreign as it seemed at the time. And then I kind of made the connection that I compared the two values. So as a police officer, I would say to myself that, you know, as a police officer, I would help a lot of people. And that was one of my main things and main reason why I love being a police officer, because I pride myself on helping people. And then when I looked at nursing and kind of, you know, imagine the profession and what's one of the main pillars of the profession, I realize it's the same thing. It's just in a different way that nurses help people. So I use that common thread to kind of to bridge that that gap or that to cross that intersection, if you will. And so those are the two things, you know, that helped me to sort of make the decision to transition from law enforcement to health.
Right. That's okay. That's great. You know, and it's good to kind of share that story because many of us have had the challenge when we moved to the United States to kind of have a transition. And many people I talk to just have different ways on how to deal with it. But it's good to share that so that anybody who comes in you can at least learn from some of the experiences.
Right. I just wanted to add quickly to complete answering your question. And so in nursing, there are two main components among many components within nursing, because there's lots of areas within nursing that you can become, that you can choose to take up some areas, specialized areas. So but there's a medical aspect to nursing and then there's a mental health aspect to nursing. Those are two of the broader areas in the field of nursing. So to transition, so initially when you join the nursing corps or the nursing profession, you have to, it's automatic that you become a medical nurse. So I did that for briefly because I had to do that. And then knew right away that, you know, the medical nursing, which is a very technical form of nursing, that it wasn't for me. And I became more interested in the nursing profession, when I realized that there was something called mental health nursing, which I didn't know at the time. But when I found that out, then that actually, you know, gave me more motivation to push further. And then realizing as I grew into mental health nursing that while I was doing policing in Jamaica and even within my neighborhood in Jamaica growing up, that I was exposed to mental health and didn't realize it. So then mental health, when I realized that there was a mental health component in nursing here and what it entails, then, you know, my motivation meter went up a whole lot more. And so the motivation, I was even more motivated to pursue that.
Yeah. That's good. And in our community, in Africans and people of African origin, mental health was and probably is still some sort of topic that people don't talk about. It's some sort of stigma towards that, especially when it runs through the family or something like that, or if you know somebody very close, a relative who's having that. Oh, I happen to also have that in my family where maybe one person I know of had mental health problems, and it was always a challenge to talk about it. What's your advice towards Africans and people of African origin in terms of dealing and talking about mental health?
Good. So in the medical profession, they would tell you not to give people advice, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's a liability issue. But I understand what you're saying. So my position on this, not necessarily giving advice, but my position on mental health is to embrace mental health more and to try and understand more what it is. I know that once you start trying to understand and get into that, you know, core of what really mental health is, then you will realize that it's an integral part of who we are. I've had many conversations with a lot of friends and learned colleagues within the profession. And I've even heard, not just myself, I happen to think and to know that mental health is spiritual health. And it's the core of who we are, because it's focusing on the mind, obviously. And so, there's a ton load. There are a ton load of phrases that would, coin the importance, that would actually create a picture of importance of the mind, and as it relates to, tools that we need in life to make it, to be successful. So it's all in the mind, that people would say. And you play sport, you play soccer, so a lot of times I'm sure that your coach probably would tell you that it's a mental game, right? It's more mental than it is physical, and such is life. Mm-hmm. I've come to understand that life is more mental than it's physical, and so I would encourage not just Africans, but people in general. And I kind of want to create, what's one of the big things with me, I like to, harmony is one of my big characteristic in terms of value. And my appeal to people is to embrace mental health and just to understand it, because one of the other things is that the mind can easily play tricks on you, right? And you've heard that before.
Yeah.
So, simply put, it's my mind. I want to have a control of it. I don't want it to play tricks on me. And even when it's playing tricks, it's going to play tricks on you anyway. So once you understand your own mind and have a fair degree of understanding, probably you're never going to understand your own mind 100%. You're never going to understand your own mind 100%. But the more you understand it, then hopefully it's the more, or if the less, that your mind will be able to play tricks on you, because you'll be more aware and conscious and on top of it. And even when it does play tricks on you, then you will understand and you will not panic and not be bothered by it. And believe it or not, as simple as this sounds, that's the basis for a lot of mental health issues, where people don't understand how the mind works. And they don't have even a simple understanding of how the mind works. And so when the mind, does play a trick on us, then we tend to be confused, bamboozled, frustrated, and bothered. And that's the start of mental health. And then that can just develop into very serious mental health. So just embrace it. It's an understanding of the mind. And then even when things start to happen, and from a practitioner standpoint, is to normalize it and to get people to understand it can happen to all of us. No one is above board here. And, so trying to destigmatize the whole thing, the label the labels that the negative labels that are out there, you know, terms like crazy, madman, psycho. These are some of the negative terms that we use. And I'm sure you've heard some of these terms, yes. Even in Africa. So that's one of the challenges too. So that's all built into my position and what I would encourage people to just love each other. And then when we love each other, then we do less of the stigmatization or the labeling of people. And mental health is one of the main areas or aspects of our lives that we tend to want to use a lot of negative words and negative phrases to describe people.
Right, unfortunately, yeah.
And then the irony is that it makes the mental health or the situation that they're going through even worse.
So, thanks for that response. I like it. And so I want to talk up. I know you've given back to the community on multiple occasions, but one interesting aspect that I have I want us to talk about is your involvement in giving back in terms of making chants and music. Faith, you are a Rastafarian. So how did you come about with that passion on trying to combine your faith, your principles, and then also music to bring awareness to the youth?
Yeah, so that's a powerful question. I like it. I mean, I'm not even sure I can answer that, but that started from youth. From a youngster, the way I was raised, I was raised in a kind of humble fashion, really humble fashion. So, I went to a private school called Fairview, and that was a Baptist school, and that happened to be a high school. But it was a high school that was fused, or it was a merger with the high school, the Baptist High School, and a Baptist Bible College. Mm-hmm. And so I got a lot of Christianity and a lot of spirituality, but Christianity from that. And then my parents, particularly my grandmother, went to a lot of church too, you know what I mean, as a Methodist. So I had some exposure to Methodists and to the Baptist denomination, or the Baptist variation of Christianity and the Methodist variation of Christianity. And then growing up in Jamaica, also, you know, being raised by Bob Marley and by extension, Haile Selassie, and a lot of other Rastafarians in my community at the time. And so I was also at the same time being influenced by Rastafarians. And so then further on, I realized that it's basically one of the same, meaning that even though they're different religions, but there's a commonality of love, a common thread of love. The transition for me, so I incorporate concepts from both religions, but Rastafarian, I emphasize more, you know, tenets of Rastafarian and use more tenets of Rastafarianism to kind of sort of guide my life, because I think the tenets of Rastafarian, particularly ones that emphasize a lot of lifestyle, a lot on lifestyle, actually, like, you know, the food you eat, you know, the clothes you wear, meaning modest, that down-to-earthness of Rastafarianism, appealed to me. And appealed to me, you know, the older I became. And so, I kind of transitioned more to Rastafari. the older I became. So then, you know, well, in my earlys, I stopped eating meat, and just now I eat only fish along with fruit and vegetables mainly. And then.
I did speak to you on some of your diet.
Yeah.
Way of life, so you call it. And then, yeah, that was very impressive. And then just knowing you playing like football with you, or soccer, as you say here, for many years, I've seen how disciplined you are in terms of your diet. The only person who come close, or maybe the only person who reminds me, Cristiano Ronaldo, who is very strict.
Yeah, no, there are a couple of folks who, if I might call his name, Jan.
Jan. Yes, I know Jan. Jan is very disciplined too.
Yeah, you know Jan, as I mentioned his name too. Jan is very disciplined. So yeah, there are some few disciplines, and that's the thing with soccer too. Because soccer, I grew up on soccer. I've always said, you know, to people, soccer for me is spiritual. And what I mean by that is a predominantly physical game, but it exposes you to interacting and fellowshipping with your fellow human beings, in ways that, you know, you wouldn't ordinarily get the opportunity to do that in a normal course of life. And so, you know, you would make physical contact with people, you'll be, you know, negotiating conflicts, because it's a physical contact sport. And, you know, we're on the field as a, you know, seeming like we're going to like have fisticuffs and fighting and all these kind of things. And then, you know, like heated verbal battles. And then at the end of the game, you know, always in my experience, you know, personally, I try to at least, you know, make amends if I thought that during a game I behaved in a way that was unbecoming of me with another brother of mine, or sister for that matter, because at times we play with females. So soccer, you know, has taught me a whole lot about life. Yeah. So, you know, so to incorporate, and then music. So the Bob Marley reference, particularly along with other musicians and reggae, you know, pioneers. That's really...
And Bob, I've listened to a lot of your chants, and there's one on live that I really like. I think I have it here on my phone here. Let me see what I can just play that.
Let's go show more love. Let's go show more love. Let's go show more love. Yeah. May I go chant, but you won't hear. And every word they use, I prepare here. And everything they lose, I think they feel here. From what I love, they choose, so they feel here. Yes, I love the truth. Yes, I love the truth. Now that I've lost, not losing.
Bob, you're really good. Actually, there is also another one that I listen to a lot of them. I know you posted on some of the another one also you went spiritual on this one. I just want
only in the house of the Lord I'm strong. Only in the house of the Lord I stay. Only in the house is where I love life the most. That is my only house.
Yeah.
Good, and I'm ghost.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. You like nothing, no matter how you feeling. For another challenge, you don't have a chill. You're not forgetting, no matter what is happening. I said, I'll give it, they gave me all you make
up. Oh, I am not praising.
You don't have a chill. You don't have a chill.
That I think you should be going professional with this music stuff, because your stuff, I know it's like more of like a hobby, but every time you post one joint on that platform and I listen to it, it's just sound like a very professional musician, which I believe you are. So maybe you should get out there, and maybe if there's any people in that industry listening to this podcast here, maybe it'd be a good platform here also to kind of put your name out there. But I do know that you do have some social media that people can follow you also on some of the work you do in terms of music. I know we're going to talk about soccer also, but where can people get this music?
Yes, so people can get the music on, so Love, Chat, and Rant. So it's Balfour Gore. So BALFOURGORE. Yeah. And that's my full name. You know, so I don't use any kind of handles or anything like that. So it's Balfour Gore at Love, Chant, and Rant across the different social media platforms. So whether it's YouTube, TikTok, you know, Instagram and Facebook, those are the main ones. So obviously, it differs across platforms. At YouTube is where you get the full repertoire in terms of the different, all the chants recorded, you know, within in the studio and, you know, and done officially in a professional manner, and distributed through DistroKid and available on different platforms also. So, you know, I mean, Apple Music, Amazon Music, I think Spotify, Shazam, you know, all the music platforms, the chants are available. All of these chants are available. These and many, many more, as you have alluded to. You know, so again, Balfour Gore on YouTube at Love, Chant, and Rant. So Love, Chant, and Rant is the almost like, you know, what you call, like, what we call it now, a logo. And it's the mantra that I'm using and I have used and will continue to use to sort of, you know, lead the way.
Yeah.
It epitomizes the energy. So it's love, and then chant is a purposeful musical, you know,
yes,
genre. And then rant, like kind of what we're doing now within this interview, to kind of sort of explain, to converse with people, to interact with people, you know, robust conversations, and to explain to people to understand me more, understand where the music's coming from, and to share with people more, and for me to understand the public even more too, you know?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. Love and chant. So yes. Balfour is again, B-A-L, F-O-U-R, G-O-R-E.
Yes. Yes.
All right.
So then soon and very soon too, hopefully in September, this coming month, I want to, you know, along with at least one of my sons, or probably both of my sons, to kind of start up, do some consistent live content, in the format of playing the chants, explaining them. So Love, Chant, and Rant. Conscious attainment is the word. You know, don't steal it now, please. No, conscious attainment. So, you know, not just flat entertainment.
Yes.
So, and then Love, Chant, and Rant therapy. So Love, Chant, and Rant therapy through chanting, and Love, Chant, and Rant therapy through just straight purposeful conversations, talking. Okay. Talking mental health. So, you know, we want to kind of build that and keep, you know, because this is the era for it. I mean, it, you know, with young people gravitating to social media, using social media, the platform to build relationships even more. And that's kind of the way they're influenced, because
yes,
they're always on the phones and always on the apps and so on and so forth. So we want to kind of reach out to them where they are, and to help to influence them in a positive direction.
In a positive direction. Yes, I've listened to your music. It's very clean.
Yes.
Love and spiritual-oriented music. Yes, love and chant. I like that. So talking about soccer for football.
Yes.
That's, so I have no need to be one of the biggest Arsenal fans. How? Yeah. Mm. So do you think this year you guys will be winning the title?
Um,
or how, what does it take
to beat
Consistent and faithful, it's not bad.
I'm hopeful. I think it's the way to put it. I'm hopeful that we can go ahead and win it. It's possible. You know, I think City, Manchester City are still the favorite to win it. However, I think we have a better shot of winning it this year than we did last year. You know, but Manchester City, they have improved as well with, you know, signings and even Gundogan coming back from Barcelona. You know, because he's a very good player and, you know, so, and then I think they probably made one or two, you know, great additions. There's a Brazilian winger that they have. That's very
good. A new striker in addition to Gabriel Jesus.
No, I'm talking about Manchester City.
But I'm saying a lot of people from last season mentioned that the missing piece for Arsenal was a traditional striker. Did you guys buy any traditional striker?
No, so that's what I'm saying. That I wasn't talking about Arsenal. I was just talking about Manchester City, and that they got a Brazilian. So I'm explaining to the reason why Manchester City is still the favorite.
Okay.
Because they were already, they ended this season as, you know, the champions. So that speaks for itself. And then they've gotten better, and, you know, I mean, they have arguably the best coach in the world. And then, you know, players that are really, really good, and of course with good coaching, then that's how you really end up with a great team. For us, we've added very good pieces, Calafiore from Italy and Marino just today, I think yesterday he was announced. Okay. I have to admit that. So just so you know, for the record, I think I'm a bigger fan of soccer overall than I am of Arsenal, but I am an avid Arsenal fan.
And one thing I've observed about you too, you are a teacher. You try to inculcate the principles of saying soccer is more mental. It's more about relaxing and making the right decisions, timing and stuff. I've seen you do that on soccer field, especially with the younger generations.
Yes.
Sometimes feel like it's all about running.
Yeah. So
that leads me into the other question I have for you, because I know you've been involved in soccer, you've been playing it. I've seen you even play soccer on a badminton.
Yes.
How has your involvement in soccer or football impacted the youth of today?
How does soccer impact the youth of today?
No, I mean, like, how has your involvement with soccer and the youth of the, how has that, your involvement, the dialogue that you have, the advice, the how positively have, what results have you been seeing on the positive impact results have you seen?
So the one is, It builds a better social fabric. So, you know, by that I mean, so, like for example, many, many times, you know, I'm 55, right? Many, many times, many countless times, I would have been traveling throughout life, going here or there to work, you know what I mean, just to the shop, to wherever. And I would run into people, you know what I mean, and tons of people. And lo and behold, most of these people, not most of them, but quite a bit of them, are people who I would have met on the soccer field. And they recognize me from playing ball with them. Because I tried to play ball, you know, in whichever community I am. So when I was in Jamaica, I mean, I was visible within the community, basically through soccer. You know what I mean? And then sometimes as a chant on the stages and stuff like that. But soccer has been one of the main vehicles for me to be visible. And to be visible, when you're visible with soccer, then, you know, the kids and the youth and the youngsters know that you're level with them because you're out there competing with them. you know, you're having fuss and conflicts with them, and then you're able to resolve your conflicts. And at the end of the game, most times, if not all the time, then we're friends.
So the ironic thing about soccer, I've noticed that, you know, all the field, people seem to be like enemies on opposing sides. But as soon as that final whistle goes, there's handshaking, there's coming together, there's, friendship building and everything else. That's good.
Right. So it's one of the community, it's one of the beacons in the community. It's one of the few remaining community elements or community entities that still, serves, just being there, you know, as an opportunity for kids to release energies, for kids to de-stress.
Relaxation from the hustle and bustle of life.
Yes. And that's what it has done for me, you know, to escape a lot of the stresses. So this is a good coping skill, because we need escape mechanisms, because life can be that challenging and overwhelming at times. And so soccer being one of the, you know, few remaining positive coping skills that we have. So, you know, growing up as a kid, I wanted to become a professional soccer player. And then once I continued to develop, and then, you know, lo and behold, I realized that it wasn't this only thing it wasn't just soccer. It doesn't just represent an opportunity to become a professional soccer player, but it's a great way of developing your own human value and purpose in life, and to become a better human being. And so it has shaped me, and it has helped to shape a lot of other youngsters and older people just like myself who have remained with it and continue to use it. So I think it's important for us to not to follow, you know, soccer blindly to the part where it leads to a professionalism or a professional aspect where you can earn from it, and not blinded by that, but to also be balanced and understand that it serves as a very good, effective vehicle of shaping human beings and helping to develop and produce decent human beings, you know, to people who are able to socialize better, to understand conflicting situations, better mental focus, because, you know, physical health is a big part of mental health. That's the irony, you know, physical and mental. So those are, you know, the main ways, in my opinion, in my views, that, you know, soccer impacts not only me, but it has impacted a lot of people, young and old, middle-aged and old, in these ways.
You're right. Yes. Absolutely, I agree. The other thing that I wanted to ask you a question that, you know, we've all had some setbacks or challenges in our lives. I know your stories are very impressive, okay? But also, as the saying goes, the downfall of a man is not the end of his life, right? So has any failure shaped your life? And what advice do you have for anyone going through similar challenges that's listening to you right now?
Yes. So failures are, it's a matter of perception. And so if you look at it as a failure or some of these setbacks, and you can frame it however you want to frame these things. So these are things that happen, you know, in a way that you wouldn't have wanted them to happen, right? So, you know, I mean, and for me, you know, one of them would be, as you alluded to it, my bad knee, right? Bad right. While I was playing soccer at the age of around about 2021, 2022, and there in Negril, I can remember the time, I can remember the place, I can remember so many things about it. I had a terrible injury while competing for a ball, a 50-50 ball with me and a goalkeeper in Negril. And I feel back at the police station. So at that time, I was a young police officer. And, you know, so both of our legs clashed going in the opposite direction. And you know how the knee is one of those joints that it's supposed to go on the straight plane. You know what I mean? And then his leg came and took my leg with the knee, of course, and the femur, and took it against the natural flow of how the joint is supposed to go. And so I had a fracture. My femur broke in three places. And I didn't even know that at the time. You know, it was, you know what I mean? So I did, I would probably say not probably the best thing I did at the time, but I hobbled. I went and briefly the doctor probably looked at me and suggested that I should have gone into the hospital. And I just went home and stayed home and did the good old RICE, rest, ice compression, elevation, and stayed there for 3 months. And then went back out after that on my walking stick as a police officer. I was at Marine Police at the time. So that's one of the big setbacks, if you want to look at it like that. And I can see it like that. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the only one per se. I mean, there were some challenges of like, so education. The fact that I didn't... So the other one would be the fact that I didn't follow my grandmother's advice and forceful directive as a little kid growing up to take school seriously and education seriously. That was another one of my challenges, that I had to come back to the United States at 36, 37 and relearn, you know, and retool educationally. You know, and then with my health and my focus on health and spirituality is one of my ways of combating what you'd call a sobak, you know, a so-called setback with the knee. So, you know, in terms of maintaining my fitness, my weight, you know what I mean? So the knee, potentially seen as a setback, the way I look at it now is in a positive direction, because one of the reasons for my focus on health and doing reasonably well with health is my knee. So, you know what I mean? So then I can see it as a setback, and I can see it as one of the reasons that has propelled me to where I'm at right now, particularly, you know, as a reasonably a decent, healthy individual. It has motivated me to live a healthier lifestyle. Yeah. And my education, remaining stagnant for a long period of time, then I use that. I just, you know, thought that, all right, there's still time for me to turn this wrong right. And, it's never too late. And so at 35, 36, when I realized that young officers in Jamaica were getting promoted over me, left, right, and center, because ultimately they had a better education than me at the time. And it was clear to me then that my grandmother was absolutely right. And so I made way. So one of the main focus leaving Jamaica to America was to retool my education. Yeah. And so... So those are ways in terms of, I think it's my spirituality, always searching for the positive. So whatever you search for, you can find. So that's one of my mantras. So if you have a positive mindset, then you'll find positivity in anything.
Yes.
So for example, just look at this horrific, you know, horrible injury and, you know, femur broken three spots and I'm hobbling and home for how many, you know, and you see how I play with a big wrap on my
knee
like that, but I'm out there. And so, you know, and that's one of the motivational factors for this, you know, rigid, right, disciplined health lifestyle. So I can manage my weight, and the lighter I am and the more toned my muscles are in terms of regular workouts, because I work out every morning, you know what I mean? And so that keeps me in shape enough to at least play, even on a bad knee, and to still play what I love at least once or twice a week, you know?
I assume you never got surgery on the knee, did you? Did you get surgery on the knee?
No, I didn't get surgery on the knee. And interestingly enough, I had a client this morning who I did a psych evaluation with, and he's same age as I am, 55, and he walks into the office on crutches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me, in short, he gave me a story. And the story he gave me is laying out on the, is explaining himself in a way that it made it a convincing argument that medical professionals are, I'm not trying to badmouth medical professionals, because here I'm a mental health / medical professional. Yeah. But it's all the time that route is the best route. And right. So, I have no regrets, really, of taking, the matter in my hand, so to speak, to kind of start to develop a kind of a disciplined lifestyle around the fact that I have a bad injury. And because a lot of times the point that he made was that after he had done a lot of surgeries and they essentially failed him, because it was a lot of, at one point they had a wrap around the knee that was too tight, and it created a neurological problem for him. And, and a lot of additional complications going through the medical route. And then had to resort to his own measures of, staying at his home, using his imagination and getting some contraption and to kind of exercise the knee. And it's through vigorous exercise of his knee and lower leg upper that he was able to walk again. And he's convinced that it's not his ability to walk now, and the fact that he's walking now is not attributable to the doctors, but it's to more his individual will and determination and discipline to vigorously exercise that knee. And that's the beauty of physical exercise. Well, it shows us that a lot of times we're not prepared and disciplined enough to do the work that we need. And this body of ours needs a lot of physical exercise, particularly when you're injured.
That is good. That's great. So do you have a life philosophy right now, or what do you have, something that you live by, or you just live each day as it comes?
Yes, my philosophy. There are a few, but it's centered around love, and for me, if you have to press me, it's centered around love and life. Which to me, they're the same. Love and life, they're the same. Love and life. So life that we were given, this one life, and replicated throughout all of humanity, and the life that we exist, not the physical aspects of it, but the fact that we all are dependent on the same things to survive and to stay alive, air. Food, and so that explains that it is the oneness of it. It's not that someone else over there or you can survive without air and I cannot. It's that equality of existence. The same rules that would govern you for you to exist and to be alive is the same rules that govern me and allow me to be alive. So that equality of it. So then love is that. Love is also that. So that's the parallel between the two, love and life. So life is this, life that we exist in, this equal measure thing. It's an equality to it. that we were all given this life, and not be distracted. Don't be distracted by the physical elements and the physical, impediments, of life. But that spiritual aspect of it, that we all need the same thing to survive. And then and then love is this unconditional thing. So that the idea that life, and the simplicity of it and the beauty of it was replicated equally to all of us. And then the fact that we have to live and die. All of us live and die. Bar none. So to me, that's kind of what love is. And I always say that there's this kind of analogy that I think about. If you should, let's say, have a millionaire or a billionaire, so to speak, and if the billionaire was going to indicate any measure of love that he has, and you would ask him that, all right, all of humanity is going to suffer or is going to die. Unless you share a dollar each around to each of us, would he do it? And that would be a test of whether or not there is this kind of a love, a genuine love, for people, rather than the lust for money. And I say lust for money because people talk about the love of money is the root of all evil, which I disagree, because love in itself is pure. So when you love, then anything you love appropriately and love in that wise fashion, the way love is. So then if I love money, then I would know that money, then I wouldn't abuse it. I wouldn't, at the expense of, having my brothers and sisters. So love and life are basically the same,
That's a very good philosophy. I've definitely been uplifted with that. So in view of the time allocation that we have, but before we go, I have two things that I would like to ask you. One is, what's next on your journey right now? And then also, what final message do you have for audience that can uplift and encourage people in their walks of life?
So on my main agenda, individually speaking, is to love every moment and to use my mind to soothe me and to make me happy, so to full joy the moment, as we say, enjoy the moment. And how I do that is to stay in the moment and to just say love, just love everything, because love doesn't have to agree to love. So I can disagree with you, but I love you nonetheless. If you are my son, so whether or not you did something that I disagree with, you're still my son, and so we're spiritually connected that way. So that's my individual mantra that I use, and that's the goal, to be more disciplined along those lines. And to not to be a prisoner of the moment, and to allow physical situations and life scenarios to sort of pin me down and to take away my emotional stability. And that's so easily, that can happen so easily to us. And then collectively, it's to spread that message. And so that's how I want to go to social media and to develop content along those lines of loving everyone, despite our disagreements and our differences, and to live that. And that's a tall order. It's easier said than done, but the reward in that is very worthwhile to really have a better environment, a more loving environment, a more giving kind of environment where we can feel more comfortable in it. So to use my chance and my ability to spread that love through purposeful talk therapy and love chant and run chants, using my chance to convey that message to the globe, to the whole human family, so that we can be better people. So to appeal to ourselves to be our best selves, you know. And I think the other part of your question was, what was that again?
What final uplifting message do you have? I think you...
Yes, right. So that it's answering, yes. So to encourage us to appeal to our best selves, yes. Yeah. And our best selves is always going to be our brothers and sisters keeper.
Yeah.
Yes. And we're all connected. One human being, black, white, pink, blue, and, you know, and so on and so forth, right?
Yes. Yes. Love and chant.
Yes.
It's been an honor having you on this podcast. You know, you sharing your story. Very uplifting and in-depth. I think we'll try to bring you back some point in time once you have your Love and Chant channel going on. I would like to listen to it and then also have some more discussions with you. But unfortunately, this is just the only time that is allocated for us for this podcast. And I just want to say a big thank you for making time out of your busy schedule to be with us today and have great conversations. Thank you so much, Mr. Barker.
Thank you, Kof, and it's a pleasure to be here, and I'll happily accept an opportunity to be here again with you and to continue to share and spread the message of love.
Thank you so much for being with us through this session, and don't forget to follow us on our social media. Thank you, sir. Kofi Dike signing off.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Uplift Chronicles. I hope you found inspiration in today's stories and the spirit of upliftment. Remember, every life has the power to inspire change, and every story is a thread in the rich tapestry of our shared heritage. If you enjoyed this episode, kindly subscribe and leave a review, and share it with someone who could use a little upliftment in their life. Follow us on social media for more updates and join the conversation. Until next time, keep uplifting and stay inspired. Signing off, this is Kofi Dike.